Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Elizabeth Gilbert is the best-selling author of now two books that have really garnered a great deal of attention. The first, Eat, Pray, Love, was her memoir of leaving a marriage and finding love on the other side of marriage. Her new book, Committed, is about what she says is her story of coming to terms, making peace with the institution of marriage. We're talking about it today, not because this is Oprah, where Elizabeth Gilbert has appeared more than once and to great acclaim, but because this raises, the popularity of these books raises a real question as to what has happened to marriage in terms of Western culture and our times, just in our own lifetimes. What we're talking about here is a transformation of marriage in which Elizabeth Gilbert becomes a symbol of this. It is clear that she separates sex from marriage. She writes about the fact that she became basically involved with boys and men at age 15, so marriage wasn't about that. And then she left marriage when she didn't want to be married anymore. She really even talks about the fact that this means that her own sense of meanness, her individualism, led to the fact that she, having expressed herself in getting married, decided to express herself in getting out of marriage. She decided that she did not want the house in the suburbs. She did not want a baby. Amazing things she says about, actually, her decision not to have children. She wants a career, and frankly, she wanted relationships with other men. And then she got out of the marriage. And she wrote this travelogue. Eat, Pray, Love is actually very well written. Vivid descriptions of going through Italy, India, Indonesia. She's a very gifted travel writer, but in the midst of it, she's very, very honest about her liaisons and affairs and love interests along the way. And yet she's getting a lot of traction. In other words, her books, especially Eat, Pray, Love, have skyrocketed to the top of the bestseller list. They are blockbusters in the publishing world. A movie is being made of this book with Julia Roberts starring in the role as Elizabeth Gilbert. This is not some kind of peripheral cultural incident. This is something right at the center of where Americans are. Millions of American women have identified with her story, and I find that not only fascinating, but incredibly revelatory about where we stand on the issue of marriage today. Now, in her new book, Committed, she writes about her decision to get married after, you may remember, if you are familiar with the book, she ended Eat, Pray, Love, as she's in a love affair with a man, a Brazilian man named Felipe, and they are determined to be together, but they are equally determined not to get married. And then, well, she is now married. So she owes her readers an explanation as to why she is married. They got married, she said, because they were sentenced to be married by the Department of Homeland Security. The only way they were going to be able to be together in the United States was if they were married. So they got married. Now she's trying to make peace with the institution, but it's clear the kind of marriage she has now is, by her own estimation, a marriage that her grandmother would not even recognize. She said about her grandmother in that generation, they were known for the fact that they gave. That's the word she uses. That's the verb she uses. They gave. But she's far more concerned with her meanness. Now, what gets me, that's her expression too, my meanness. But what gets me is that millions of American women, without apparently any sense of embarrassment, have decided that Elizabeth Gilbert is their heroine. When something like this happens in the culture, it's one thing just to look at it at a distance and kind of scratch your head. It's another thing to say, okay, let's go out and find out what's going on. I was sent a copy of Elizabeth Gilbert's new book, Committed. I looked at the publicity material, I looked at the book, and I thought, you know, this is right down the line of something we need to talk about. Because here I have in my hands, in this one book, an explosive symbol of what has happened to marriage in just the last two or three generations. I want to invite you to join the conversation. You may be familiar with the book. You may not be. You may be familiar with Elizabeth Gilbert and her story, or you may not be. You're undoubtedly familiar with marriage and what it means and how it's changed in our times. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to your calls in just a moment. You can find my article entitled Committed, Not by a Long Shot, at my website at albertmohler.com. And from there, you can find further information. We'll get to that issue in just a moment. First, a review of some other issues in the news. Mary's Eye Stange writes at USA Today about Mary Daly, the late Mary Daly, who died just a few weeks ago, was one of the most famous feminist theologians of her time. She declared herself post-Christian, and I wrote an article about her, and that comes into this story because Mary's Eye Stange at USA Today cites my article about Mary Daly. She is championing her. I tried to give a very honest evaluation from an evangelical perspective. Mary Daly made headlines for years, literally, sometimes because of her controversy teaching at Boston College, historic Catholic institution. She eventually left there because she had reached the point in her feminism that she would not even allow men in her classroom. And so they came to a parting of the ways between the faculty member and Boston College. She had departed Christianity long before that. She believed that all monotheistic faiths were inherently patriarchal. Phallocracy is what she called Christianity, and I'll let you look that one up for yourself. But let's just say that she was absolutely convinced that any depiction of God as father was the deification of the male at the expense of the female. She called herself a crone. She referred to herself as, quote, a positively revolting hag. She was proud of that by herself. And she wanted women to abandon Christianity and all monotheistic faiths in order to claim their own liberation. Now, she writes, that is Mary's Eye Stange, writing a very laudatory article on Mary Daly, cites me. She writes this. She says, the fact that of her importance might nowhere be more evident than an assessment of Daly's importance to contemporary Christianity from a most unlikely source. Well, let me just insert here. Yes, I think in this line of thought, I'm certainly a most unlikely source. Writing at his blog, Albert Mohler, president of the conservative Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, observed of Daly, quote, she must be given credit for her honesty in accusing theological liberals of lacking the courage of their convictions. She saw the entire structure as hopelessly patriarchal and called for a complete break with Christianity and theism. Many of today's liberal denominations and seminaries have absorbed and accepted her basic critique of Christianity, but lack her boldness and intellectual honesty, end quote. And Mary's Eye Stange, who teaches at Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York, says that she basically agrees with me there, but interestingly, from the other side. And so every once in a while, it's good to know that we're reading each other's mail. And when it comes to the radicalism of Mary Daly, you know, frankly, there are those who champion it, and there are those who critique it, but anyone who reads her stuff cannot deny it. Interesting article in USA Today today. Wall Street Journal had a very interesting article by Richard Whitmire just in recent days. The right man is getting harder to find. He writes about the fact that most women want to marry a man with an equal or greater amount of formal education. And that's becoming more difficult. That underlines what Maggie Gallagher was writing about in the Boston Globe just in recent days about the fact that we now have about 60% of all baccalaureate degrees in America granted to young women, only 40% thus to young men. So whereas in the past it was relatively easy, just demographically speaking, for a woman to find a man with equal or greater formal education, it's becoming more difficult, and the younger you go in the population, the more difficult it becomes. Richard Whitmire writes about the fact that there are women who are now complaining that that they are not able to find a man, and thus they are going to have to, quote, marry down. Richard Whitmire says, in the U.S., the best place to witness a man shortage in action is at a markedly gender-unbalanced college. While researching a book on why boys are falling behind in school, I visited several such campuses. In some instances, you know, it just becomes very, very apparent that you've got a large number of young women who are never going to find a man to marry who will meet their formal educational level. Now, I come back to the fact that what we have in this country right now is an incredible lack of attention to boys and young men and getting them ready for formal education, incentivizing them, creating an educational environment that is not anti-male and feminized, and giving them the kind of opportunity and the kind of support so that they will get where they need to go. But this is a part of a larger picture. Frankly, the likelihood of a young man getting to college under these circumstances and functioning well is radically decreased when he does not have a father in the home. You look at how this society has marginalized fatherhood, and you'll come to understand why so many boys are having a difficult time. When they do not have a role model in the home, not only to serve as a model of what they would aspire to be, but frankly, someone that's able to kick them in the pants and make certain that they are doing the homework and that they are getting the job done and that they are clear in understanding what the expectations are, then you end up with a perpetual boy culture. And here's what Richard Whitmire is really getting at. Most women do not want to marry boys. We'd better take responsibility to raise boys to men, or there are even bigger issues at stake. When we come back, we're going to talk about Elizabeth Gilbert. I want to ask you the question, what does it tell you about America that her books become blockbusters? What does it tell you that there are women who look at her on television, in the media, they read her book, and they say, I want to identify with her? Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. As one who loves books and watches the publishing world, I did watch the skyrocketing sales figures for Elizabeth Gilbert's first memoir entitled Eat, Pray, Love. I took a look at it and quite frankly saw that it was pretty solidly chick lit. It was intended for a female readership, and for that reason, I didn't give it much attention. The subtitle of her first memoir, Eat, Pray, Love, is One Woman's Search for Everything Across Italy, India, and Indonesia. All right, so that's the first book, and we wouldn't be talking about that today, but for the fact that there is a second book. And the second book was sent to me by her publicist. It's entitled Committed, A Skeptic Makes Peace with Marriage. Well, given the priority of marriage, I think, in the Christian life and understanding the importance of marriage in the Christian worldview, I thought, well, okay, I'll take a look at this. And after taking even just a cursory look, I knew that, this was something we were going to have to talk about. It took me some time to pull everything together that I needed in order to write the article I published this morning entitled Committed Not by a Long Shot. I begin simply with this. Elizabeth Gilbert is once again a married woman, and she has written a rather lengthy memoir in order to explain why. While in ordinary circumstances, such an explanation would be quite unnecessary, in the case of Elizabeth Gilbert, some explanation seems to be required. Folks, I read this first volume, Eat, Pray, Love, and, it's just pure narcissism. I would love to be able to put a kinder term on it, but I really can't. Here you have a woman who was married, started a relationship with a man to whom she was married at age 23. They got married at age 25, and when she was, I believe, 31, she realized that he wants a baby, she doesn't, and she wants her career, and she doesn't want to be married. I don't want to be married anymore. I don't want to be married anymore. I don't want to live in this big house. I don't want to have a baby. I don't want to be married anymore. I mean, this is the kind of the mantra she picks up. And so, in this society, having now routinized divorce, she got herself unmarried. And so she divorced, rather acrimonious divorce. She writes about that very honestly. And then she decided to set off on a quest for love. And that's what she writes about in Eat, Pray, Love. She writes a good deal about her particular, background and all the rest. She clearly separates love from marriage. As a matter of fact, in the book, she writes about her own adolescent experience. She says this, I got started early in life with the pursuit of sexual and romantic pleasure. I barely had an adolescence before I had my first boyfriend, and I have consistently had a boy or a man, or sometimes both, in my life ever since I was 15 years old. There was, about 19 years ago now, that's almost two solid decades I've been entwined in some kind of drama with some kind of guy, each overlapping the next with never so much as a week's breather in between. Yeah. Well, that is what is getting the applause lines from all kinds of women in this country. She's been on Oprah repeatedly. She garners huge audience. And she is surrounded by adoring fans who write her letters, just look at the website and all the rest, about how they found meaning in identifying with her. And they're going to have a whole new way to do that with the movie for Eat, Pray, Love that's coming out starring Julia Roberts in the role as Elizabeth Gilbert. She writes in the story, she's a great travel writer, by the way, just in terms of her writing style. She writes with incredibly vivid color about the places she visits, the people that she encounters. But it's clear along the way that she's basically picking up sexual and romantic experiences on her way to finding herself. And then by the end of the book, just to cut to the quick, she has developed a relationship with a Brazilian-born man named Felipe, And they fall in love, and they decide that they want to be together, to live together, but they are equally determined that they will not get married. And the book basically ends with them walking off into the sunset in love, but not in matrimony. And that is supposedly the way things are going to go. She has closed the book on marriage, but not on love. Again, leading to blockbuster bestseller status on the New York Times list. She's made millions off of this, and she has garnered millions of fans. And then along comes the second memoir. It's just out. It's entitled Committed, A Skeptic Makes Peace with Marriage. And, you know, she must think that a lot of her readers of the first volume are going to be frustrated with her because she did what she said she wouldn't do. She got married. So she's very apologetic about it. She describes herself as being sentenced to being married by the Department of Homeland Security because even as she and Felipe tried to set up house here in the United States, it was clear that his particular background of being Brazilian and living in Indonesia really became a matter of interest to Homeland Security, and he was going to be denied any kind of long-term status in the United States if they were not married. Now, along the way, by the way, some amazing things. She talks about trying to explain to Homeland Security that this man is her boyfriend. She says this, and by the way, this is very perceptive, and this is why the book is worth our attention. Just listen to this paragraph. She says, in a situation like this, may I just say, there's perhaps no more feeble-sounding word in the English language than boyfriend? Yeah, that's absolutely right. There's a huge difference between boyfriend and husband, and it is more than the Department of Homeland Security that recognizes the difference. In this particular book, she writes about the fact that she did get married, but she didn't get married in the sense she got married the first time. She didn't get married in the sense that her mother got married. She is not married in the way that her grandmother got married. She writes in this book about the fact that this is pragmatic marriage. It's expressive marriage in the sense that this expresses who she is. This is what she wants for now. This is who she wants for now. She does want monogamy, but that's not implicit in the institution. That's just a part of her negotiation about getting marriage. She's asking a lot of marriage, she says, but on the other hand, she's not asking too much. She's made peace with marriage. She doesn't want to disappoint her feminist friends. She says it's not a delivery service of ultimate bliss. It's just more or less a way of being together that requires some public recognition. By the way, she totally supports same-sex marriage. She clearly believes that society has moved in the direction of legitimizing basically all sexual pairings or partnerships or relationships. She traces the sociological development of marriage and especially towards this modern expressive marriage that is nothing more than people saying, I want to affirm you and loving you and be with you for now. And away from marriage as an institution with binding commitments, she clearly doesn't want anything to do with children. Really very radical thing she says in here about kids. She quotes her own sister, by the way, as saying, you better think about having kids the way you think about having a tattoo on your face because it's irreversible. All right, well, if you're going to compare having a baby to having a tattoo on your face, we got a problem here. Now, as she continues in her review of marriage and how she came to terms with it, she writes very movingly at times about what's really going on in marriage, what has gone on in marriage, very self-perceptively. She writes about the fact that it's really about her meanness. That's who she is. It's her individuality. As I wrote in my article this morning, this sense of personal autonomy just reeks in all of her writing. It's fundamental. It is the given in her life. The one thing she knows is that she is an autonomous individual, and she will accept nothing that will encroach upon her autonomous individualism. She recognizes that thus her marriage is completely different than that of her grandmother, her mother. Her grandmother looked at marriage in terms of doing, giving, and meeting responsibility, even obligations. But that's not the way she looks at it. Folks, join the conversation. Tell me why this is so popular. Why is it? Can you explain this? That millions of American women, who presumably are not in this same kind of lifestyle, seem to aspire to it? Elizabeth Gilbert has tapped into something that's more than just a market for books. She's tapped into a major current in the culture, and it's something we ought to think about because this is the great alternative understanding of marriage to that which Christianity offers. We've met that other conception, and this is it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about Elizabeth Gilbert's best-selling memoirs, Eat, Pray, Love, and Now Committed, and what this says to us about the transformation of marriage in our times. As Christians, we need to be able to look at this and understand this really changes the way a culture understands marriage, this whole transformation, in such a way that when you and I talk about marriage and when, well, Elizabeth Gilbert talks about marriage, we're talking about two very different things. And from a Christian perspective, that's a very crucial distinction. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to tell you honestly, I would like to think that Elizabeth Gilbert's understanding of marriage, which is typical, I think, of her kind of cultural milieu there, I'd like to think it's not creeping into Christian churches, but I know better. And that's the urgency behind this conversation. Let's go to Susan, listening on WTLN, calling from Orlando, Florida. Go ahead, Susan. What do you think?
Hi, Dr. Mohler. Well, it's at the root of it, it's selfishness and rebellion against God. I'm married. I've only been married for about a year and a half. I'm 31 years old, and it's hard. It's hard work, and someone told me right before getting married that marriage is the crucible upon which we learn how to die to self. And what it sounds like this woman, I've not read this book, but what it sounds like this woman wants to do is absolutely not die to self. In fact, she let her marriage die so that she could retain her own autonomy in herself. And that's really sad because unless she comes to know Jesus Christ and repent, you know, that is just not the path that God would have us to be on.
Well said, Susan. I really appreciate your call. Let me tell you, let me underline and affirm here how right you are by making this observation. Elizabeth Gilbert's selfishness, her self-centeredness, is not hers alone. This is, after Genesis 3, we know the human story. The reality is that when we are saved from our sins, we have to be saved from this self-centeredness. We have to be saved from this selfishness. But, you know, even as we are tempted by this and entwined in all these different levels and layers of selfishness, most of us find ways at least to hide it. You know, even in polite society, we try not to look so selfish or to be embarrassed if we're caught in a moment of very self-evident selfishness. But Susan, what makes this really interesting is that Elizabeth Gilbert raises it to an art. She's not embarrassed about selfishness. She champions it. And that is what, to me, is one of those alarms going off to say something huge is going on here. She can champion this kind of selfishness. She can write about basically marriage having to come to terms with her rather than she coming to terms with marriage. And then you come to understand, okay, the fact that she wrote this memoir is slightly interesting. The fact that it's been at number one on the New York Times bestseller list, that's more than slightly interesting. That tells us not just about Elizabeth Gilbert, but about the culture. And I think it tells us a great deal about our evangelistic responsibility and opportunity, the challenge we have in this society, not only on the issue of marriage, of course, but on the gospel. Because this is an unvarnished worship of the self. I can't find any better way to put it. Now, by the way, Elizabeth Gilbert knows at least that some Christians would think that she's supposed to feel guilty about this. She describes herself as Christian by heritage, but not theologically. So she's culturally Christian by the fact she was born to a family that identified as Christian, but she's not theologically Christian. By the way, she makes that very clear as she deals with the issue of prayer and her belief in God or the God of her imagination, etc. Susan, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Kingsport, Tennessee. Jeremy's on the line. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hey, Dr. Mohler, this is Jeremy. I just want to say, it just seems to me like she's just trying to justify her own sin. See, it's not our way. It's not about us. It's about what God says and has commanded for us for our lives. And I believe it's just a way of people, a way for them to better suit their lives and making up their own, almost their own rules instead of believing in wanting to follow what God has for us.
Yeah, well said, Jeremy. Let me tell you, there are two stories out there, and you're going to buy into one of them or the other one. And the one story is this, that marriage is something given to us by God for our good, and human beings have found all kinds of ways to mess it up. But there is an intention God has in marriage, which we can know and are to know and are obligated to know and to follow. The other story is that marriage is merely a human institution. It's changed vastly over the years, and lately it's changed in the better because it affirms more of our autonomy, and our responsibility now is to make marriage just what we want it to be. So you got those two different stories. Either marriage is an objective thing given to us by God, and we got to come to terms with it, or it's something we can just make whatever we want it to be. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. We're discussing the two blockbuster bestsellers by Elizabeth Gilbert. The first, Eat, Pray, Love. The second, Committed. In the first, she declares her liberation from marriage and says that she's going to be in a relationship with this man without marriage. They're committed not to be married. And the next thing you know, they are married because the requirements of Homeland Security sentenced her to be married, she says, in order that they could be together. She tries to explain how it is that she came to terms with marriage, and in so doing, she really shows us the transformation of marriage in our times. This is the quintessential secular liberationist model of marriage. That's what it is. And you set that over aside, a Christian or biblical understanding of marriage. She involves herself in this book in a lot of sociological analysis. She makes some very pointed statements about how marriage has changed. She's right about a lot of that. But I'll tell you, it hasn't changed as much as she implies, even as she tries to make her point. But that's also not actually how we find out what marriage is. We don't just look to history to find out what marriage is. As Christians, we're obligated to go to the scripture to find out what marriage is. And we judge everything in every generation by that. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. What is the popularity of these books telling you? So many American women wanting to identify with Elizabeth Gilbert as a role model. Let's go to Stephen Conklin, Destin, Florida. Go ahead, Stephen.
Well, I think you're seeing it all over the place, Dr. Miller. I think you look at Desperate Housewives and the enormous success that show is having. You look at Sex and the City. You look at the L Word. The huge audiences and generally accepted within the Christian community. When was the last time you heard a sermon talking about how women should not be watching those programs? I've never heard one. And yet you see all kinds of attacks by the Christian community on men. And so you end up with the demasculization of the male, taking the male away from being the head of the house. And instead you have this enormous cultural influence on women and women's acceptance of that kind of cultural evolution away from the traditional marriage within the Christian community.
Yeah, Stephen, there's a lot of insight there. I really appreciate your concern for the compromise within the Christian community here. But you also you made something as an interesting observation there when you pointed out that that women in some ways get away with this in ways that men would not. I think that has to do with the feminist tide in the society understood to liberate women. But, you know, as you were talking, Stephen, I got to tell you, there's something else here. And that is that most men are never going to read this stuff. And I'll be honest, there is no way I was going to sit on a plane last week and hold a copy of Eat, Pray, Love and let people get on the plane and see me reading it. This is chick lit stuff. And to be honest, I only read this because I wanted to be involved in having a discussion about it, writing an article about it. I felt a little uncomfortable reading this. I felt like I was kind of overhearing the kind of conversation. I was a little kid. I used to have to go with my mother or grandmother. You know, they go to have their hair done. You sit in the beauty shop as a little kid, a little boy sitting in that. That's alien territory. That is a strange world. I would have been more at home and lost in space than in the beauty parlor. That's exactly the way I felt, 50 years later, looking at this book now. But, you know, I think men ought to take a look at this. And you mentioned, sermons, a lot of things about it. You know, I don't think most men are really taking a look at this stuff, which is the reason why I felt like I had to. So there I did it. I feel better telling that story. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Russell's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Russell.
Oh, You've said a lot of the things I think that I've been thinking of, but just to kind of reiterate, you're not going to understand what's going on, I think, unless you look at this like a lost person. And in the Christian community, any person who's living unfaithfully to God is living as if they were a lost person. And we think of it as a lost person, it makes more sense. In the lost world, men for decades have had role models to look to and say, hey, look, here's a guy who's a womanizer. He's with a different girl every night. He's a hero. I want to be like him. But women have never had a public figure like that that they could really look to and say, wow, look at, she's so courageous for what she's doing. And so apparently, according to New York Times, this woman's writing these books, and she's standing out as a public figure saying, hey, it's okay to be completely open in your relationships with men and just go from guy to guy. And women have never really had that. So that's what it seems like to me would be the big appeal for women is here's a public figure, an idol, you know, a role model they can flock to and say, oh, we want to be like her.
You know, I think there's a whole lot of wisdom in what you just said, Russell. And I think the most important part of that is that you must look at a book like this or a phenomenon like this and say, what kind of worldview makes this make sense? And you talked explicitly about this when you said you have to look at this as a lost person. From a non-Christian perspective, yes, this makes a lot of sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense because the worldview as a whole has no barrier to getting where this book would take you. There's no God who would say no. There's no objective institution like marriage that would bind you. There is every reason to buy into this liberationist mythology about how history is moving forward and to continual liberation, especially of women. And so this story does make sense. You get traction with this. And that's why we're having this discussion today, because this is one of those rare places, I think, where we can do this kind of analysis. We can say, all right, let's get into the mind here. Let's look at this. How does she justify this? Well, she doesn't feel like she has to justify this because this is normal to her. And let me just point out, I'm not making up this as some kind of Freudian psychoanalysis. I'm taking her own analysis given to us in the book. When you start out in promiscuous sexual relationships with men and boys, beginning when you are at age 15, and as you say, they overlap with barely a week between them, you know, any kind of marriage is going to look like some kind of rock of stability in the midst of that promiscuity. And when you think about young people today, you can think that, you know, their low estate of marriage, their low estimation of marriage is probably due to the fact that, you know, anything that looks like less than a new relationship a week looks long term, looks like a long term commitment. And yet from a biblical perspective, it comes up so short. Thanks to you so much for your call, Russell. Let's go to Salem, Oregon. Charles is listening on WCJC. Go ahead, Charles.
Hello, Dr. Laura. Dr. Miller. Sorry, I'm nervous.
That's all right. Let me tell you what, Charles.
My wife or had our divorce was final just a few days ago. And we were in a Christian marriage, and she left for what I believe is a perceived increase in freedom and the pursuit of prestige and power.
Wow. Charles, I wasn't expecting anything quite that powerful and so recent there. I think it's interesting that as you look at your own experience in recent days, you can hear the refrain that is found in this book. Let me tell you, I pray for you, Charles. And I pray God's comfort to you, but I pray there are some women who hear your voice and say, I don't want to go that way. Look at this book. Does it attract you or repel you? That's a real test. We'll be right back with final thoughts on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Interesting responses come in just about the whole book, the whole question about not only Eat, Pray, Love, but committed Elizabeth Gilbert's two memoirs on marriage, leaving it, coming back to it, but on her own terms. Folks, the kind of analysis we're talking about here is what we need to have the reflex to do on any kind of issue like this. Whether you see something on television, you have a conversation with someone at a PTA meeting, you hear something in a lecture on campus, and you think, you know, that makes sense to that person. This lifestyle, this kind of judgment on marriage, this kind of negotiation in terms of romance makes perfect sense to Elizabeth Gilbert and apparently to millions of women for whom she is a role model. So we need to step back and say, all right, our Christian responsibility is to figure out what makes that make sense to them. And this is where you go back to fundamental issues. It starts out with whether or not you believe in the existence of the one true and living God. If you believe in a God who made you for his glory and redeemed you by his Christ and will judge you by his righteousness, then just about everything else is going to fall into place. But if you have a secular view or a view of God that is something other than the biblical view of God, or a view of your problem that's something other than sin, and thus you do not need a Savior, and thus if you think of your goal as something other than being judged in accordance with the righteousness of Christ rather than your own unrighteousness on that day of judgment, then you can negotiate everything in between. And that gets back to the fact that we do live out the real substance and the consequences of our worldview. We do. We do every day. You want to know what you believe? Look how you act. Look at your moral intuitions. Look at what makes sense to you. And one of the tests we ought to have for ourselves, and one of the tests I think we ought to have for our children, is as we listen to ourselves talk and as we observe ourselves engage these things in the culture, are our instincts and intuitions really shaped by the Scripture? You know, when you look at your children and you engage them in conversation, one of the tripwires of real parental concern, and I don't say this in order to scandalize you or to frighten you, but just to get your attention as parents, you know, enter into a conversation with your children, especially teenage children, about this. And judge just how much of what someone like Elizabeth Gilbert is saying makes sense to them. And give them the ammunition to understand why it must not make sense. Why we can understand how someone with her worldview can be where she is and think as she thinks, but why the rest of us just can't go there. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll look at an issue like this and take it apart and try to figure it out. And folks, they just come at us faster and faster, issue after issue, more and more. But in terms of cultural analysis, one thing you need to do is look at the bestseller list in the New York Times, USA Today, and elsewhere. Look at the most popular books being sold in your local bookstore. That tells you where your neighbors are and what they believe. Back next time for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.